dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. There is, by my lights, hardly any better resource chronicling, analyzing, and teaching the rest of us about the nature of the current phases of the war for the free world than the Long War Journal. It is a product of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, and it is the brainchild and the creative product of our guest for a very special edition. He is, of course, Bill Roggio, a regular here, I'm very pleased to say, but he has generously given a full hour out of his day to help us really do a deep dive on what we're up against at the moment in the form, well, principally, of global jihad. Bill, it's great to have you with us. Thank you so much for finding this time for us and for giving us the benefit of your expertise each week, but most especially for today.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine, Frank. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to start with a topic that we discuss from time to time, but I think it's really important for the context of this longer conversation, Bill, and that is, are we indeed, as you see it, facing a global threat from these jihadists? And what is it that animates them? Is there something that we can find, or are they just incoherent franchises that don't really amount to much other than a sort of local nuisance?
No, we are indeed facing a global jihad, and there's several flavors of it. Right now, primarily two main flavors. That would be Al-Qaeda and its branches, and then the Islamic State, which is an offshoot or split off from Al-Qaeda after a dispute over the territory in Syria. But it doesn't make them any less dangerous. In fact, I think in a lot of ways, you have two competing jihadist movements. So you have competition, you know, which, if you're a capitalist, you certainly believe is a good thing for developing and, for innovating. These groups...
That would make it a bad thing in this context, though.
I mean, yes, in general, a good thing, a bad... You're absolutely correct, a bad thing in this context. Both groups have a singular goal of establishing a global caliphate and imposing Sharia law. This is a direct threat to the U.S. and her allies and friendly states and even unfriendly states. These groups don't care whether you're Russian or you're American or you're Saudi. They want to impose their will. They have an ideology that they adhere to, and they're in this fight for the long haul. And I think they take advantage of the fact of our election cycles, our unwillingness to fight long wars. Just 3 years ago, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is the predecessor of the Islamic State, was defeated. And today, it controls half of Iraq and half of Syria. They're willing to stick it out through good and bad. The same thing with the Taliban in Afghanistan. We routed them in 2001, 2002, and yet they control territory in Afghanistan, and they're preparing for our departure. They're willing to fight long wars, and we're not. They're committed to their ideology, and we're committed to political partisanship and election cycles and what I call McWar, which is, you pull up to the drive-thru, you conduct your bombing run, you declare victory, and you go home.
Move on. Let me just, before we move on, Bill, let me ask you about one, I would call it an urban legend that has developed of late, and that is that Al-Qaeda regards the Islamic State as too violent or too extreme, and therefore it is accurate to describe this latter group as even worse, even more dangerous, even more jihadists than al-Qaeda. When you say there's a competition between the two of them, is it over degrees of virulency with respect to their jihad, or was there something else at work in their rift?
That is an issue where, you know, al-Qaeda has issued directives, not just to when the Islamic State was part of al-Qaeda, but to its own affiliates in Africa and in Somalia and various places where they talk about their have to be careful about how quickly they implement Sharia and how tough they are on local populations who aren't used to it. That's not the issue. Al-Qaeda have been more than happy, and as a matter of fact, for more than a year, tried to reconcile with the Islamic State. But the head of the Islamic State, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi and his crew, they didn't want to do it. The issue between them is who runs the caliphate, or should we even be declaring a caliphate at this point? That is what drove the wedge between the two groups. Al-Qaeda is more than happy to keep the Islamic State, its predecessor Islamic State of Iraq and the Sham, within the fold, and tried to get them to stay in the fold. They didn't care how violent they are, as long as it works. And it, by the way, it does work.
And I think you've used the analogy, Bill Roggio, of sort of a mob fight. The elements of the mafia, they are not appreciably more ruthless the one versus the other. They just want to be in charge and want the other to be subordinate to them.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I mean, look, I think the mob analogy works very well when discussing how their leadership works, how the franchises or branches work. They're all part of the same family. They just have disagreements on how to implement their policy. And that's where this division between the two groups has arisen. And, you know, look, I think to this day, I think al-Qaeda would love to get the Islamic State, especially given their successes and their capabilities. They'd love to get them back under the fold. But that issue of, you know, declaring the caliphate, that's going to be a tough one to bridge. But, again, it doesn't mean there's a fracture. It doesn't make them any less dangerous. It makes this more dangerous and more threatening to us.
Bill, against the backdrop of what you've said, and we're going to do, as I say, a much more deep drill down on many of the points you've just made, but for the moment, let me just ask you, this seems so obvious. The evidence is all around us, in fact, that the violence of these jihadis is global in character. The ambitions of them to have a caliphate, to impose Sharia on everyone, Muslim and non-Muslim alike. And yet this is something that one has hardly ever, if ever, heard from the Obama administration. In fact, let me just read you quickly a quote that I'm just struck by. John Brennan, who at the time I believe was the president's Homeland Security advisor, said back in June of 2011, quote, "I'm not talking about al-Qaeda's grandiose vision of global domination through a violent Islamic caliphate. That vision is absurd, and we are not going to organize our counterterrorism policies against a feckless delusion that is never going to happen. We are not going to elevate these thugs and their murderous aspirations into something larger than they are," unquote. You're a serious professional in this business, Bill. You cover it day in and day out, both, you know, what's being done by the other side and what's being done by ours. Does that strike you as, well, dereliction of duty to understand the nature of the threat and perhaps malfeasance at best?
Yeah, absolutely, Frank. I mean, look, they're directly saying, we are going to ignore the primary reason for al-Qaeda, for global jihadist group's existence. We're going to ignore how they organize their entire fighting force and their leadership and their propaganda. We're just going to dismiss that as crazy, and we'll attack them the way we want to attack them, the way we believe that they should be defined. You have to, you know, this would be like saying, well, we don't really believe the Nazis are for domination of Europe and Asia. Or we don't believe communism is a global ideology that seeks to take over the entire free world. We'll just treat it as local ideological movement, and we're not going to organize. Could you imagine if we did that during the Cold War?
Well, I know how it would have come out, that's for sure, and we would not have prevailed. And again, this is a fellow who was at the time the president's Homeland Security Advisor. He's now the director of the Central Intelligence Agency. It's mind-boggling. We're going to talk more with a man who does understand the nature of the enemy and has a clarity of its activities that we all benefit from at thelongwarjournal.com and elsewhere. More with Bill Roggio. It's Manage Again right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
Are you looking to hire an IT specialist or a logistics expert, a medical technician, or a security professional? Well, there are some very qualified candidates out there, America's wounded warriors. These men and women returning from battle are eager to get back to life at home and a good job. Some have wounds you can see, and some have wounds you can't see, like post-traumatic stress disorder. For these accomplished professionals, Wounded Warrior Project has developed the Warriors to Work program, a career counseling service that helps wounded warriors translate their military experience to the civilian workplace. These warriors have world-class job skills and a unique perspective on teamwork. And to ensure proper placement for each individual, Wounded Warrior Project works with employers to find just the right candidate for the job. When your company is looking to hire talented, highly trained employees, contact Wounded Warrior Project at findwwp.org. Welcome home the brave.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. It is our distinct pleasure to be spending an hour today with our friend Bill Roggio, the managing editor of the Long War Journal, a former veteran in the United States military, also frequently embeds with forces fighting those who are perpetrating the global jihad, which we're discussing with him in detail. And Bill, I want to run by you a quote from a professor that I had at Georgetown University a million years ago, who's a very highly noted, somewhat controversial historian by the name of Carol Quigley. And Dr. Quigley had a quip about the Romans, who I think most of us think of as a pretty formidable outfit. And he said, no, to the contrary, they were a weak team in a lousy league. And I wonder whether the same might be said of this outfit, the Islamic State. It seems by many accounts to be not that many folks. And while they do have some assets, to be sure, they would appear to be facing fairly formidable odds. But yet they are prevailing again and again. What do you make of Carol Quigley's analysis as applied to these guys?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that analogy when comparing with the Islamic State. I've got to be careful not to over or underplay the group. But look, we have to recognize it is fighting on multiple fronts against the Syrian military as well as jihadist foes like al-Qaeda's affiliate in Syria and other rebel groups, and it's gaining ground. And in Iraq, it's fighting the Iraqi army as well as now the Kurds, and is taking some U.S. airstrikes as well, and yet it's still successful. Is that because they're a powerful group? No, I think they're a small group relatively compared to what they're up against, but they are well-trained. They're committed to their cause, and they seem to have good organization and planning. When you look at, everyone thought, wow, the Kurds, that's the answer. They can stand up. But, the reality is, the Kurds are just as good or just as bad as any other army in that part of the world.
And especially if they don't have the wherewithal to fight a fairly formidably armed ISIS. Bill Roggio is our guest with an insight into the nature of this outfit, the Islamic State, also known as ISIS. Bill, you were saying that the Peshmerga of the Kurdish area has been regarded as a pretty formidable fighting force as well, yet they didn't do so hot in the early engagements with ISIS. They seem to be doing rather better with some air support from us, but it's unclear to me whether they're getting the wherewithal they need and whether we're bringing to bear a strategy for doing something about ISIS that has any durability to it. What do you think?
No, I agree with that. Right now we don't have a strategy. All we're doing is tactically, we're trying to get some people off of a mountain and provide them humanitarian aid. And we're conducting limited, and I'm talking very limited airstrikes, probably four or five airstrikes against the group daily based on the pattern that we've seen or since they've started. Look, the Kurds, they're a good force, but they're obviously not that good. And I think that's just goes to show the Islamic State, it may be a weak team. They can't stand up to the U.S. for certain against the full might of the U.S. military if it was unhandcuffed. But they're just good enough against these other local groups. But yeah, you're right. We don't have a strategy. Being the defensive military air arm for the Kurds and providing some humanitarian relief isn't a strategy. It's barely tactics. It's a stopgap. And, the administration is very clear. It does not want to reengage into Iraq militarily on the ground. And I think that's what's going to be needed if you want to drive the Islamic State out of, there may be some limited successes here or there, but how far, even the Kurds, how far are they going to want to fight? Are they going to want to fight for Mosul? They're going to want to take the fight even further than that? I seriously doubt it.
Yeah, I do too. Bill, let me just ask you about one other aspect of what this outfit, the Islamic State, has going for it at the moment. They have amassed immense amount of money, it appears, billions of dollars. They evidently control oil fields and a dam. And the thing about the dam that is particularly troubling is, should they decide to blow the dam in a fairly horrific act of terrorism, there would be large numbers of people downstream, including all the way to Baghdad, who would be inundated, swept away, their lives and livelihood and the economy deeply, deeply savaged. What is it that is creating such a formidable force at the moment? Is it, in fact, their fighting skills, or is it these other attributes that are going to make them able over the longer haul to control territory and perhaps even have a lot of influence over Baghdad, which they might not be able to take militarily?
It's a good question. I think right now things are pretty much going to be stalemated. It's going to be tough for the Islamic State to retake Baghdad, or to take Baghdad, but I think they can certainly turn the heat up on the city like it was in 2006 and 2007 before the surge took place. I suspect where the battle lines are now are about where they're going to be in the next 6 months. It's hard to know beyond that, absent, you know, it depends, does the U.S. seriously get involved and act as the air arm for the Iraqi military as well as the Peshmerga? These are questions we don't know, but I think for the next 3 to 6 months, we're going to see the battle lines about where they are. Some things may change hands here or there. This is what we've seen in Syria, as a matter of fact, for the last year or so. Even the gains that the Islamic State are making, some of them are at the hands of the Syrian military, but most of them, they're taking a control of territory that was under control of their foes, from Islamic groups and rebel groups, such as the al-Nusra Front and the Islamic Front. So they're consolidating their power over areas that are already out of government control. I think without significant U.S. backing, and I'm talking, you know, it would have to be boots on the ground, things are going to be about where they are. They could destabilize Baghdad. They may be able to take a city here or there. Maybe Ramadi falls, or maybe something, you know, goes back in the government column and or a city here or there. But they're going to control a vast amount of territory for the short to midterm.
And Bill Roggio, does the fact that they have this kind of state, for want of a better term, from which to operate now, given what you've said about their leadership and their evident combat expertise, mean that they may be able to move in other directions with maybe paralysis in Syria and Iraq, but moving against, for example, Jordan or Lebanon?
You hit it, the nail on the head right there. I think if there's going to be any advances outside of the region, those are the two likely areas. I mean, for all the Turks have either turned their head or provided, you know, played the Pakistani game of ignoring these groups along the borderlands, I don't think the Turks want to lose territory to the Islamic State, and I think that they're capable enough to keep them from capable enough of keeping that from happening. And while I don't believe that they can have a lot of success in Turkey, if any success at all, they certainly can move into Jordan and into Lebanon as well. These are two countries that are ripe for the Islamic State to make some gains. If there's any movement into Jordan, that's a staunch U.S. ally. I would expect U.S. involvement. But, you know, again, the U.S. is going to get mired into a fight with the Islamic State. And in Lebanon, we've seen this happen with jihadist groups fighting the Lebanese military. And actually, an Islamic State and al-Nusra Front has been fighting in a region in the Bekaa Valley against the Lebanese military, and even took a couple of dozen Lebanese troops hostage and still are holding them. So,
and that would be the al-Nusra Front, which is tied to al-Qaeda, and perhaps evidence, as we've been hearing, Bill Roggio, of the willingness of al-Qaeda elements, notwithstanding their leadership, to either switch colors or at least make common cause, again, for the purpose of advancing Sharia and the caliphate, which unites all of these characters. Bill Roggio is our guest. We're going to come back with more about the various other places the global jihad is manifesting itself right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Frank Efting with the Secure Freedom Minute.
For over 50 years, the Muslim Brotherhood has used front groups to wage what it calls civilization jihad against this country. That form of warfare uses subversion rather than violence to impose the Islamic supremacist code of Sharia here. Critical to the Brotherhood's success is suppressing awareness of the danger its stealthy operations represent. Last week, Brotherhood fronts and other Islamist groups, joined by a number of leftist organizations, wrote the White House, demanding a halt to training that exposes the civilization jihadists. They seek mandatory deprogramming of federal officers who have received such training. The Muslim Brotherhood may want us to believe that truth-telling about Sharia and the effort to impose it here is offensive. It is also absolutely vital to our security and freedoms and must not be suppressed. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement? And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, wherever the mission takes us, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're visiting for this full hour with our friend and much admired colleague, Bill Roggio of the Long War Journal. Bill is also a senior fellow with the sponsor of that important project, the Foundation for Defense of Democracies. He is, in addition, a media fellow at the Hoover Institution and a contributor in many outlets to our understanding of the nature of the long war we're in. Bill, we've discussed now a fair amount about parts of the Middle East and the sort of cockpit that it represents in this global jihad. But let's talk about a few other players in it, maybe starting with the Saudis. They have been, for years, as you know, very deeply involved in promoting jihad. They don't want it at home, mind you, but they certainly have been funders of it and through the Muslim Brotherhood and other vehicles, including Al-Qaeda, actively involved in helping bring it elsewhere as part of a shared ideological mission, Sharia, the caliphate, and so on. What role are the Saudis playing in all of this at the moment?
Oh, look, the Saudis, you hit the nail on the head. As long as it's not happening at home, the Saudis are more than willing to either turn a blind eye or provide covert support for jihadist groups. And, you know, look, wanted Saudis are still appearing in battlefields, senior or popular clerics are raising money for jihadist groups in Syria and Iraq and other places, with the Saudis doing nothing. The fact that the Golden Chain, the backers of 9/11 and other jihadist plots, continue to operate to this day, 13 plus years after 9/11, just tells us everything we need to know about how serious the Saudis really are about helping us contain and defeat these jihadist groups.
How reliable they can be.
In Syria, I think that's the real key. When you look at Syria and where weapons are flowing and money is flowing, you could see that the Saudis are still in the game.
Let's talk about Qatar. This is a country that has been much in the news of late, as an entity trying to help broker a ceasefire for Hamas in the conflict with Israel. But talk a little bit about what role it's playing in the global jihad. We're also told, by the way, that it is an important center for American bases and a place that we can safely sell billions, I think 11 to be precise, billion dollars worth of arms and so on. How does this net out, Bill?
Yeah, it's another enigma. I mean, it's a country where some of our biggest bases in the Middle East are, and it's supposed to be an ally, and yet it too is funneling weapons and money and munitions to jihadist groups. Again, in Syria, it's dealings with the Taliban and setting up the political office there, and the five senior Taliban leaders who were released from Gitmo or close to Al Qaeda, they're now running free and unfettered inside Qatar, and they're going to be heading home in less than a year. Look, you can't trust the Saudis, you can't trust the Qataris as far as you could throw them. To say these countries are allies in the fight against global jihadism is just an absolute mistake. You have to watch what they're doing and watch the funding and watch the support and flow of munitions and weapons to groups in places like Syria, and you'll recognize that they are not our allies, that they're either covertly supporting jihadist groups throughout the world.
Bill, I couldn't agree more, and it's very troubling that they're perceived widely in lots of quarters as other than, at best, fair-weather friends, and most of the time, not even that. Let me ask you about a country that is unmistakably hostile, that disagrees on some points of theology with the Sunnis that we've been discussing, but has its own deep-seated commitment to Sharia, its own supremacist agenda for bringing it to the world, albeit under Shia management, namely the Islamic Republic of Iran. How does it fit into the global jihad at the moment? And what do you make of the fact that we seem to be acquiescing to it becoming a nuclear-armed state to boot?
Yeah, look, and I suspect, I can't prove this, that Iran is already a nuclear-armed state. It's just a matter of they haven't openly tested what they very likely produced. And if they haven't made it, they could probably assemble whatever weapon they need in short time. The Iranians, outside of what the support of Hezbollah in Lebanon, as well as jihadist group or Shia militias in Syria and in Iraq, and then the support for Hamas in the Palestinian territories, it also backs Sunni jihadist groups. And we know, this is often dismissed as a conspiracy and Shia can never support Sunni, yada, 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 except look at treasury designations of top Iranian officials or officers within the IRGC's Quds Force. That's basically their special operations branch where they support various jihadist groups throughout the world. The Treasury talks about a secret deal between Iran and al-Qaeda. It details its support for something called the Ansar Corps, which is based in Mashhad in eastern Iran and supports the Taliban and al-Qaeda. It talks about al-Qaeda operatives who are operating freely within Iran with support of IRGC Quds Force. I could go on and on, but it's, look, the Iranians, for years, I mean, they were friendly to the Muslim Brotherhood. The name of the assassin of Sadat is on a street in Tehran. They appealed to the Muslim Brotherhood to try and work together for decades.
Bill, let me turn quickly to a couple of other areas, because it's in the nature of the global jihad. Even when we've got a full hour to discuss this, we don't have sufficient time to do justice to all of the other aspects of it. But just if you could help connect the dots here to Afghanistan, Nigeria, Pakistan, and what's happening in our own hemisphere with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, Hamas, Hezbollah, and the like, on the other side, or on this side, for that matter, of very porous borders.
Yeah, right. It's difficult to sweep all that up in a brief statement. But, yeah, as you have Iraq and Syria blowing up in front of us, you have the, Israel and Palestinian charges, that blowing up in front of us, the negotiations with Iran over the nuclear program, which I think is just is folly. People are forgetting that, you know, in Afghanistan, the Taliban are resurgent. The U.S. is withdrawing. We're going to be down to less than 10,000 troops by the end of the year. That number will be halved by the end of next year. And the Taliban are starting to take control of districts, and they're attacking security forces. And I just read this yesterday, in Helmand province, the Afghan military is starting to conduct negotiations with the Taliban. And once you see that, you know that they're losing ground, because they're going to have to cut deals with the Taliban. And the Taliban always prevail in these situations. We've seen this in Afghanistan and Pakistan all the time. In Pakistan, you still have jihadist groups operating. The Pakistani government, and to me, is the biggest state sponsor of terrorism, the rival to Iran, let's put it that way. They just happen to deal with the Asian jihadist groups. And you still have jihadist groups that are even opposed to the Pakistani state, still active. Al-Qaeda is still headquartered in Afghanistan, Pakistan. In Nigeria, you have an active jihad going on by a group called Boko Haram, that basically means education is sin, or Western education is sin. This group conducts suicide attacks, conducts operations just like Al-Qaeda does, and it's known to be supported by Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb and another group called Shabab, which is Al-Qaeda's affiliate in Somalia and East Africa. And you got jihad going on in Mali, where the French actually had to intervene militarily with boots on the ground in the last year, and they're still mired in Mali because these jihadist groups are persistent. They just don't go away.
They're playing the long game for the long war. Bill Rogier, we're going to come back to a very brief review of what's happening in our own hemisphere on the other side of a short message. Bill Rogier, our guest from the Long War Journal, its managing editor, and an incalculably important resource for all of us. Stay tuned for more right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook on Amazon.com.
I was diagnosed with PTSD. I got out and was sort of on my own.
Since 2003, more than 103,000 service members have been diagnosed with PTSD. Hope for the Warriors focuses not on what happened, but what happens next. Don't let them be forgotten. You can help restore hope to our military families.
My wife and my son are affected by combat, too.
Visit hopeforthewarriors.org today.
People know that they can turn to them and trust them.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I lost my arm.
I lost my legs.
But you can't see what I lost. Over 625,000 vets are suffering from traumatic brain injury
and post-traumatic stress. They're the wounds you can't see.
But with your help, we can expose the invisible wounds of war.
And get these veterans the help they desperately need.
100% of your donation goes toward building treatment centers. Help heal the invisible wounds of war. Donate at makeitvisible.org.
I had no choice the news that was given to me on August 2nd.
Gold Star mom, Debbie Lee.
But I did have a choice how I responded.
In August 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
I chose to put on Mark's boots, pick up his weapon, and stay in the fight for our troops and their families.
And America's Mighty Warriors was born.
Mark's name meant Mighty Warrior. And he definitely lived up to his name.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org, you'll find Mark's last letter home.
Read it, and you'll know what AMW's about.
It's about service to active duty members of the military and their families.
Including care packages, visits, and more.
It's about supporting the wounded and the people who love them.
It's about the Gold Star family.
Special retreats, concerts, Mother's and Father's Day events to let them know they're loved and not forgotten. Donations are tax deductible and go directly where they're needed.
Read Mark's last letter home.
And just as he inspired his mom, let Mark inspire you to some random acts of kindness of your own.
At AmericasMightyWarriors.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at DailyCaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, alas, I'm sorry to say, for our final segment in this very special hour-long treatment of the Long War by the man who chronicles it arguably better than anybody else in Washington these days. He is Bill Roggio, the managing editor of the LongWarJournal.com. President of Public Multimedia and a senior fellow at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Bill, you're doing a marvelous job of connecting the dots between these various jihadist elements. Unfortunately, we probably need another hour to do full justice to it all. But I do want to turn quickly to what these guys have now got going inside this hemisphere, the Western Hemisphere, south of our border particularly, but increasingly there's evidence, at least on the part of Hamas and Hezbollah and the IRGC, inside the United States as well. And How serious a problem does that constitute here at home, do you think?
Yeah, look, I mean, and I'll answer the second part first. I think it is a serious problem. Remember, you had a plot connected to Hezbollah to kill the Saudi ambassador in Washington, D.C., and they were going to do it by blowing him up at a public place, and they said they don't care how many American civilians would be killed. So, I mean, you know, we know that Hezbollah has the capacity to recruit operatives, and whether they can operationalize them and get them to actually conduct the attacks, that remains to be seen, and hopefully it doesn't happen. But we know that that there are things they would like to do inside the United States, and they're able to do this by, as you mentioned, partner with drug cartels, and you know, they have that entire network in the tri-border area in South America, where it's instrumental for them for recruiting and for raising money and for funneling money. We know Hezbollah has, and Hamas have operatives here inside the United States, or
we're told cells, supporters. some substantial number of cells. Bill, let me quickly turn, because we're going to run out of time, and I do want to make sure we touch on this one other facet of it. You have, in your work and in the course of our conversation with you today, focused primarily on the jihadists who practice their form of holy war through violence. What I would argue is the preferred technique, according to Muhammad and the teachings of Sharia. There is the other facet of this long war that I'm concerned about as well, and I think you are, namely what the Muslim Brotherhood promotes when violence is not seen to be practicable, which is to say what the Brotherhood describes as civilization jihad. Talk a little bit, if you would, Bill, about that other, not so much nonviolent form of jihad, but pre-violent form, and the extent to which it seems to be operating in a lot of places in the West, including here in the United States, in a kind of subversive assault on our civil society institutions and governing agencies.
Yeah, look, the Muslim Brotherhood is very clever at playing this game that we're the moderates, we're the ones we could deal with, we want to deal with the political process. But the reality is they want one election, one victory, and then that's the end. The reality is the Muslim Brotherhood shares the same goals as Al-Qaeda, which is imposing Islamic governance. It advocates doing this through a political process when it benefits them, but it certainly doesn't, you know, if it views that a violent mean to this end is possible, it'll take advantage of that too. So to the idea that the Muslim Brotherhood, it's just a political movement, look, it's a gateway group into Al-Qaeda. It's
the granddaddy of them all, really.
Yeah, who have provided financial support for Al-Qaeda and other jihadists. So it's not like they're looking down on their nose at the violence and saying, we can't do this. No, it's just, it's a clever political movement that has snowed, frankly, a lot of people on both sides of the political aisle who don't see it as a threat. And I think
to the contrary. Yeah, I agree. Michelle Bachmann, to her great credit, has offered legislation in the Congress describing them as what they are, it seems to me, a foreign terrorist organization. And yet, Bill, we're looking at an Obama administration. To some extent, this was true under the Bush years too, but very explicitly under President Obama and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, we have had the U.S. government actively embrace the Muslim Brotherhood, engage with it, legitimate it, fund it, in the case of Mohamed Morsi and the Syrians and the Libyans, and even arm some elements of it. This goes back to what we talked about at the top of the show, Bill. Is at best, it seems to me, kind of willful blindness, as Andy McCarthy calls it, at worst. It suggests a degree of penetration of the government by these Brotherhood operatives, and there's a lot of evidence of that at MuslimBrotherhoodInAmerica.com, folks, or at the very least, active collusion with people who, as you say, have exactly the same goals and ideological drive as Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, Boko Haram, and so many others, ISIS.
Yeah, I mean, look, it bewilders me that members of U.S. government don't recognize the Muslim Brotherhood for what it is. But I think some of it is a function of grasping for a moderate political force out there within the Muslim community and the Muslim Brotherhood. They look good. They look, you know, they talk a good game. They're extremely well organized, and I think that's one way they're able to get their way in, get their hooks in into government officials. Some who are just, I always have to be careful about the motivations of you know, those who support or seem friendly to the Muslim Brotherhood, because I don't like to say, oh, they're a sympathizer. I just can't say those things without.
I don't think it matters. It's the behavior.
Right. But the reality is if you're working with them or friendly with them, you're supporting their cause, and it's mistaken. And I really think a lot of this has to do with just grasping for a group. I mean, even the media does this. We see this with CARE, right? Council for American Islamic Relations. It holds itself up as the representative of Muslims, but you'll see a lot of Muslims say that group is radical and they don't represent us, but they put on a suit and they talk a good game, and even the media is complicit in promoting these radical groups as being the supposed moderate force within Islam.
Not
when there
as
are
a front.
Far many others they could turn to.
Well, there are many, perhaps not very well organized, but we think they're out there. And unfortunately, by empowering and legitimating and so on the Muslim Brotherhood, we're almost certainly making that less likely to be a real alternative. Bill, in closing, and we've only got about a minute and a half, so very quickly, what if you had the ear of the President of the United States at the moment? Would you be counseling him to do to have this long war come out well for our country, rather than the trajectory we're on at the moment?
I would have to say stop treating this issue as a political issue. And realistically, you have to be, before we do anything, we have to define the nature of the enemy and the nature of the threat and honestly assess them and look at what they're doing. And I think if you do that, you come to the conclusion that this is a global jihadist movement that is, you know, seeks the destruction of our way of life. And if I think once you recognize that, then we can build a strategy to go out and defeat them. But instead, we've treated them as local jihadist groups, primarily, who are looking to overthrow
the JV, as the president put it.
Exactly, the JV team, which the president said. Isn't it ironic that, you know, 8 months after he makes that statement, we're at war with the JV team?
And they are, as you said earlier, running a state at the moment, which makes him a very much more formidable problem than the varsity team that we used to be playing against. Bill, I'm afraid we've burned through an hour of your time with, I think, great effect, but it always leaves me wanting more. So I know we'll talk with you during our regular seances in the weeks to come, but I want to tell you how much I appreciate both what you do at the Long War Journal and for your visits with us. They are incalculably important in terms of educating us all about the true nature of the enemy, and you're absolutely right. If you don't understand that, folks, you're not going to beat them. Bill, we'll talk with you again next week, and we'll talk with the rest of you again, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.